This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers.
I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Welcome to the Forecast One podcast, and you're listening, tuning in right after the Qatar Grand Prix. And wow, Sam, I don't even know how we got to this point.
How did we get to this point? You know, how are we sitting here talking about to get into, obviously, the highlights of this weekend, but ultimately going into the last race without a clue as to who the driver's champion is going to be, and with one race to define it between three drivers. Quite an exciting weekend, I think, or at least one that, maybe left us scratching our heads in some areas and biting our nails in others.
Makes it very exciting, right? Not only for the championship, but also for Forecast, because it's like you're going to not only watch the last race of the season not knowing what's going to happen, but you're also going to have to predict what's going to happen. And I'm also scratching my head, but lots to talk about. And I really enjoyed this weekend, and it was a sprint weekend, so that means we've got a lot of sessions to cover. So I think it's time to just get going, and we'll be doing it with the two of us. We're going to have you play the quiz against Kari Laura once more. You're always very competitive, the two of you. So we'll see who gets the win over there. But let's first talk a little bit about Forecast stats. So we had 1,234 players this weekend. That's oddly comforting seeing that number, 1, 2, 3, 4. But I'm going to ask you, how many people do you think had a correct podium prediction?
Honestly, I'm going to go with nobody. I feel like having signs, especially on the podium, I don't think that anyone would have had been lucky enough to choose it.
All right, that's correct. But I'm also going to ask you how many people had a correct sprint podium. Of course, sprint podium being Piastri, Russell, Norris.
Well, that one I think may be different. I'm going to go with 14 people.
Well, it's not as many, but there was one person that actually got that podium.
Oh, wow.
In that order. Being
that's a little surprising.
That person being Jason Guta from Tanzania. So very well done. Unfortunately, he did not score that many points during the race. So he finished P597 in the overall weekend after being P1 after the sprint. So you see that the sprint are practically just bonus points, as they are for the drivers. We had an average score for the sprint of 10.9, and we had an average score for the race of 41.2. So that's not too bad altogether, 52.1 as an overall average. And let's get to our podium, and our podium being Alexander Parkoux from Bulgaria, Pakwesi from Ghana, and Kiara Solo from Ecuador. And actually, there was very little between those three players, with P3 scoring 84.9 points, P2 scoring 85.3 points, and P1 only scoring 0.2 points more, so 85.5. So congratulations to Kiara, and not a first-time player this time, as we had in the previous two races, but Kiara joined Playing Forecast for Las Vegas, so it's the second time playing and getting a win, so not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all.
And actually, looking at our top 10, this is the first time that we have one of the F4 drivers that are competing for Forecast, that we have a F4 driver finishing in the top 10. So Francesco Coppola, who we actually had on one of the podcasts, who we interviewed, finished on P8 this weekend with 81.9 points. So congratulations,
wow.
Francesco.
Yes, congratulations. That's a very good result.
We also had another first-time F4 driver playing Forecast this weekend, Dante Vinci from Australia, who joined this weekend for the first time. Sam, I'm going to get to one of the regular questions. From which countries did we have most players this weekend?
Of course, I'm going to, I'm going to keep Kenya in the top spot because I think they've carried that throughout this entire year. I wouldn't see any change there. I'm going to go with Spain as number two. And interestingly enough, last weekend you mentioned that the third spot was the UK. So I think I'm going to hold that and say that they repeated that this weekend.
Well, you're starting to get the hang of it. The first two were correct, in the correct order. Third one actually was back on the podium this weekend, the Netherlands. So it was 83 players from Kenya, far outscoring the number of players from any other country. Spain had 55 players and the Netherlands with 53. I asked you previously, how many do you think Canada had? So how many did Canada have this weekend?
I believe that number, and as we know, my memory sometimes serves me well, sometimes it doesn't. But I had said, I believe 23, and you had mentioned that there was 21 last weekend, or it was the other way around. So I'm going to go with 21.
It was indeed the other way around. You guessed 21. It was 23. This weekend, we're
close
back
enough
at 21. So it's switching back and forth. We actually had a new player from Canada, one of the ex-legends, stat legends, Daniel Levente, who started playing this weekend. So welcome to the game, Daniel. And we're going to look at the overall championship as well. And we had an unchanged top three for this weekend, because also on looking at the overall championship, it was very, very close, very little between the three players on top. Filippo Morelli from Italy scoring 54.1 points. He's now at a point total of 1153.4. Fede Martinez seemed to be outscoring Filippo quite a bit for the sprint, but then actually later on that was equalized a little bit for the race. He scored 58.1, so he does get a little bit closer. He's now at 1118.3, so that means there's 35.1 points between P1 and P2 going into the last race. Sam, do you think that such a point gap could be bridged?
Well, I mean, if you're a fan of Max Verstappen, you would say maybe so. but I don't know. I think anything is possible, but I do think that the chances are probably quite slim.
35 is a lot of points, no?
I think it's a lot of points. I think a lot has to happen for somebody to gain that and
especially
take it away.
Especially in a long sprint weekend.
That included, yes.
But the third player on the podium thus far is André Hiersinger. He scored 57.1, and he's at 1102.6. As you may have noticed, a lot of people crossed the 1,000 point mark. Actually, up until P112, have scored over 1,000 points now. Actually, P112 being myself, so I've crossed that mark as well.
Pro Savings Days are on at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, my Lowe's Pro Rewards members get an additional 5% off when you buy 5 or more select GE, Whirlpool, and Electrolux kitchen or laundry major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 123. Discount valid to my Lowe's Pro Rewards members only. Exclusions and other restrictions apply. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for details. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Well.
Very nice.
And it looked for a long time like I was never going to, but I've been doing quite well for the past couple of races. But we're going to look at your score first, Sam. Sam, I want to hear from you. What was your prediction for the sprint and what was your prediction for the race?
The sprint, I had Piastri winning, and I believe I went with Piastri, Norris, Verstappen. And for the race, I went with Norris winning, and I believe I went with Verstappen and then Piastri.
That's right. You were mixing up the McLarens and Verstappen a little bit. So you scored 18.3 for the sprint and 28 for the race. So that got you a point tally of 46.3, meaning you finished P820 this weekend. And I was going to ask you what you think that does to your overall ranking.
Well, I think unfortunately that's going to bring me farther away from the podium, that's for sure.
Yeah, it does indeed. You go from P64 to P70. So also not a huge loss, but your trajectory is not the right direction over the last couple of races, unfortunately. So let's see if you can still turn it around. I do think you're far ahead enough to finish ahead of me, but we will see about that. Actually, myself, I went with a sprint podium of Verstappen, Norris, Piastri. Actually, both of us for the sprint got Antonelli on the right spot for P6. I got a total of 11.4 points for the sprint. My race podium was Verstappen, Norris, Russell, so I did get the winner of the race right. Actually, I had Antonelli right in the race as well on P5, so I got 44.5 points in the race, so that got me a total of 55.9. That got me a P429, and that means I move up actually the same amount of places you move down, I move up. I'm going from P120 to P112, as I already mentioned, crossing the 1,000-point mark.
Well, it sounds like the gap between you and I is much shorter now.
That is true. I'm just checking what the point difference is between you and me, and I think it's 20.7. Yeah, so actually, you know, if we conclude that 35 is a bridge that can be gapped, then I suppose 20 points can be too.
That's very true. Anything's possible, as we clearly see going into the last race of the season.
All right, so that means we get to the part of the podcast where we talk a little bit about what happened in the weekend. And I don't know if it's going to be a little bit. I don't know if it's going to be chronological, but I do know that there's a lot of things to discuss. But let's try to build it up a little bit, and let's start with the first meaningful session. Well, for the teams, FP1 for sure was meaningful, but I'm going to skip to sprint qualifying with the Piastri pole, and with two things that were, for me, standing out. I think one of them being Hamilton not making it into Q2, actually twice this weekend, but also Tsunoda out qualifying Verstappen for the very first time in his career.
Definitely a good result for Yuki. It was nice to see him up there. Obviously, he struggled in that Red Bull since he came on board as a second driver, and disappointing for Hamilton to see him out again. I mean, we saw this weekend was all around a challenging one for him yet again, and it seems as though from the way that he has expressed himself even after the sessions that he's just not in a happy place, let's say, right now, with, I would say, some fairly valid reasons. But it, nonetheless, it was unfortunate to see him go out. I would say another surprise though was Alonso. Alonso doing well, managing fourth in the sprint qualifying. I thought that was a nice result.
Yeah, and looking very competitive through all sessions, I would say. But that gets us a little bit to the start of the sprint as well, which was, I think we can conclude that the sprint was not the most exciting sprint that we've seen this season. Actually,
yeah, I think we can conclude that.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with the track as well. I think we've talked about this several times over the course of this season, is that there's certain tracks to be, you know, I have a lot of question marks for Singapore and the Netherlands on the sprint calendar for next season. But you see it here too, that perhaps this track is not a track that is really meant for, I think it's built for MotoGP, and I think you can see that with all the, you know, the long high speed corners, which gives a nice effect. It probably hurts a lot in your neck, but it does not create a lot of overtaking opportunities for Formula One cars. I think you need bigger braking zones for that. Even that first corner where you can overtake after the DRS, even there it's kind of tough. Which is not, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I like seeing tough overtakes, but it's unfortunate that there's just one place on the circuit. And in a sprint where I think everybody was basically just trying to manage their tires, it was somewhat of a dull sprint, if I can say so. But of course, you know, we had that start where we saw actually Tsunoda very much playing the team game, getting ahead of Alonso and opening the door for Verstappen to basically gain two positions to make it at least a bit of a recovery race for him. And how do you see that with, not knowing yet what was going to happen, of course, on the Sunday, Piastri taking away 2 points from Norris and Verstappen finishing right behind him?
I was really happy, actually, to see that. It was exciting because it adds further competition in a race weekend where if Norris did have the opportunity or it was possible for him to obtain the Drivers' Championship this weekend. So ultimately, to see Piastri, especially after what has been arguably some challenging weekends that he has faced, to have him come back, secure, do a fantastic result on sprint qualifying in the pole, be able to secure the sprint race, and then, you know, looking ahead just a little bit, being able to secure pole again. I think those were fantastic results in a high pressured situation, and he was able to put it out there. So it was just, it was getting back that spirit, that ability that Piastri has in those in high pressured environments. You're seeing that once again, and I was really happy to overall see the result in sprint and him be able to obtain points that were critical. And I would say as well for Max, I mean, I think that of course we'll talk about this later on, but interesting thing overall is that he's not in a car this season that is, you know, the fastest car on the track or even.
Pro Savings Days are on at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, my Lowe's Pro Rewards members get an additional 5% off when you buy 5 or more select GE, Whirlpool, and Electrolux kitchen or laundry major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 123. Discount valid to my Lowe's Pro Rewards members only. Exclusions and other restrictions apply. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for details. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Even is extremely competitive in that comparison. So the fact that, you know, they're playing the team role, they understand the value of the points for Max, and obviously up to now he is now in contention and he's right on the heels of McLaren. So giving him that little extra boost, being able to secure just even 1-2 points, whatever it is so valuable for him to stay competitive and give him the greatest opportunity going into Abu Dhabi. So yeah, I think overall for me as a fan, without taking any sides, it was really exciting to see Oscar secure the win and Max to secure some points as well. because then, you know, you go into the race and it's just adds that other extra element of competitiveness.
Yeah, I've been talking about this for I don't know how many episodes on this podcast, that the only thing I wish for is for us to go into Abu Dhabi with everything still open. And I think
here
we've
gotten
what we've asked for. Yes, very much so. So very content with that. But I think you made some good points. And yeah, the other thing on the sprint, of course, Tsunoda getting a penalty first for track limits. We saw a couple of track limits this year again in Qatar, as we always do. But of course, also a lot of gravel traps. So, and I think some added gravel traps as well, which I guess play to the visual effects as well on this track. At least, you know, I personally like the fact that we have some natural barriers rather than just, you know, discussions on track limits and replays, because even though it's part of the sport, but you don't want to see a season being influenced by these kind of things, same as disqualifications, actually, as we saw last weekend. But yeah, Tsunoda did get that penalty, but Antonelli then also getting a penalty, so Tsunoda still finished ahead of Antonelli. Interestingly, Tsunoda finishing one place only behind Verstappen, so good start of the weekend for him. But it wouldn't last for very long. I think going into quali on the Saturday, quali for the race, I think it was one of those sessions where, I think all of the qualifying sessions have been very important this season. I mean, we've seen that throughout the season. There's been mostly race wins for people that also took pole. Today was one of the exceptions, of course, but it does bring a lot of pressure to qualifying on the Saturday. And it's interesting to see how the McLaren drivers react to that. And I think Norris responded. He seemed in control until very much the end of the session. But then, unfortunately, in that very last lap, had a little bit of a mistake into turn two, aborted the lap, and then wasn't able to go for another one, and that left the door open for other drivers, and Piastri again taking pole. And you know, you mentioned it just now as well. I mean, you just wonder why it is that Piastri just, you know, is able to turn up his game once again after, you know, several weekends in a row where he was really underperforming and not really on the edge of what he's capable of performing. So it was very good to see that he got back to that slightly late, you could say. I mean, if you look at it with you know, Verstappen today overtaking Piastri in the championship, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, the gap was 104 points at some point, and I didn't really, I mean, you can never say never when it comes to Max Verstappen, but I really didn't see this one coming, and it's very exciting. But I think we build up a little bit to the climax of what is the actual race here in Qatar, with I think the main event being a crash between Hülkenberg and Gasly. And before talking about the effects of that, what did you make of that racing incident, or was anyone to blame for it, Gasly or Hülkenberg?
You know, I think that when it came to that situation, it did look like maybe a little bit at fault with Gasly. But at the same time, it was something that actually I was more disappointed out of the entire situation to see both of them out, because they were in very competitive positions, and for both drivers, they've struggled this year. So it was exciting to see them potentially getting once again into the top 10. So to see them both out was more disappointing than anything.
It's really a shame for Gasly if you think about it, because he was in Q3 also in Las Vegas. Yeah. And in the race he also was spun out by the dive bomb that Bortoleto made, and then today again, in my opinion, if anybody was to blame, it was Hülkenberg, because I think Gasly actually gave Hülkenberg space, and he just turned in just a little bit too much too early. But in any way, regardless of who was at fault, I think it was indeed a shame to see for both of them. And Gasly really outperforming that Alpine, although you also got to say that, you know, with Colapinto in the other car, it's also hard to judge how good or how bad that Alpine actually really is. I mean, we all say that the Alpine's really bad, but of course, I think it's also difficult to. It's a little bit the same situation as what we had with Albon competing against Latifi, Albon competing against Logan Sargeant. Unfortunately, it's difficult to judge how good the number one driver is if the second driver is really not as competitive as you would like him to be. But talking about Alpine, I think we need to talk about McLaren, because when that crash happened, it was a safety car, and I don't know how about you, but of course I'd actually already played out in my head before this race started with the 25 maximum tire length mandated for Qatar. I'd already thought about what would happen if there were to be a safety car either the beginning of the race or later on in the race. I was surprised to see how few cars started on softs, because actually an early safety car and starting on the softs would mean that you could have, you know, you need to drive three tires, and ideally you do two decently sized stints on the medium and a short stint on the soft. So starting on the soft with a safety car, of course, I know talking with hindsight it's very easy to do so. I think it was probably only Hamilton, and was there another driver that started on softs? I think Hülkenberg did too, actually. But
I believe it was Nico.
That safety car, I mean, I just, you know, I was sitting on the couch with Gary Lauda, and I was saying, well, everybody's going to go into the pits now. And then I because I calculated, you know, round seven, and there's 57 laps. So that means you cut the race, the rest of the remainder of the race, into 50 laps. So that means 25 on another tire, 25 on the third tire. So I said, everybody's going to go into the pits. And then we kept on watching, and you know, obviously Piastri and Norris were ahead of the rest, and they did not go into the pits. And I started thinking to myself, wait, am I the one that's nuts here? Am I crazy? And then of course the rest of the field did go into the pits, except for Ocon, who did one lap later. You know, the engineers of both McLarens were saying that you know, they were trading, or they were considering to not go into the pits to have some more flexibility, which of course that is true. The rest of the teams, you know, they because of pitting were basically forced to either do two more stints on 25 laps or do a three stopper, which nobody did. But actually Ocon did, because he pitted on lap 8 and 9. That was confusing, but chaos beside. I was just very surprised to see that, and I also wondered whether Piastri making the decision not to pit meant that McLaren didn't want Norris to pit, because pitting would obviously be the advantage, and they would be giving Norris the advantage over Piastri. I mean, if Piastri didn't pit and Norris would have had, then I think Norris would have had a very good chance at winning the race. So everything together, I was very much flabbergasted.
Yeah, I mean, I felt flabbergasted is a great word, because I mean, I similar to you, I was sitting here at home, and the moment that I saw every single team go to pit besides McLaren, who are 1-2 in the race, and this isn't just, I mean, this is also a race that is ultimately the most critical race for them to earn points, both drivers. I truly feel like any reasoning, any logic that they're going to try to provide, or that they have provided, as to why they did not double stack, why they did not pit, is just not valid, in my opinion. And that may be a strong opinion, but I actually kind of don't think it is, because I can understand that. And like you said, the fact that you have a situation where you have tire stints where you can only run them for a certain period of time, you know, that we have that into consideration. We also can look at the fact that it seemed like the McLarens were struggling on the softs during practice. So I mean, because I didn't understand the tire decision as well initially. I also didn't understand the tire decisions at the end of the race, putting Norris on hards when he had to make ground in such a short window of time. Even Piastri going on hards was questionable to me. But more so for Norris than anything, because he had a lot more... He had a lot more... a lot more catching up to do with a shorter window of time. So I mean, the biggest setback and decision that they made, strategical error that they did, was not pitting them. And, you know, I think that if you're in a situation where you have maybe half the grid pitting, then maybe you can chalk it up to your decision, but and support it in some way. But the fact that every single team went in and you don't, that is, I don't think there's any, like I said, there's no logical reasoning for that that could really support why you would choose to do that. Whether it's a situation where they were trying to play the fair game between the drivers and they got caught up in this and they actually ended up trying to be safe in a sense, or trying to in a way not make decisions, like, for example, not take risks by putting Norris on the softs at the end of the race, not trying to double stack, instead of being more proactive with strategical decisions and really putting their feet down and taking the risks, they end up regardless letting fate fall into their the fate of everything else fall into their hands and be the determining factors to their outcome. And that's the last thing you want to have happen, especially when you are in a position right now that is so critical. So I really felt ultimately the ones that paid the biggest price here was Norris and Piastri. Piastri more so than Norris. And I'll say the reason why is because he is now, I believe, 2 points behind Verstappen going into the last race. And I can only imagine how that would feel going into a race where you've actually performed and done so well during the sprint, during qualifying. You go into the race, you have all the cards on the table, you have all the opportunity to be able to gain these valuable points, and these things happen, and ultimately there is nothing that you can do about it, and now you're in a position where you actually, it's even more complicated going into the last race. So I think that is it's disappointing. It's something that was very frustrating for me to watch. And I think an interesting thing that I've seen several times, and it's something worth mentioning, is you look at Max, and you had touched on this earlier, the fact that, you know, Max is obviously, we've said time and time again, going over so many different races and accomplishments and things that he has done that you can't really compare to a lot of drivers on the grid today, that he truly is a generational driver, and the last person that you want to give the ability to capitalize on your weaknesses or your mistakes or your failures is someone like Max. And I think that this season, more than anything, whoever wins the Drivers' Championship, if it is in fact Max, even if it isn't, it really actually sheds a light even more so this season on just how skilled he is, because he's driving a car that is not comparable to a McLaren. And it's an interesting thing that several times I've heard often recently is that Max didn't get to this point necessarily because he pulled the better drive, or because he made the better moves, or because maybe Red Bull had certain elements that were better. It ultimately was that they just have capitalized a lot of times on the mistakes that McLaren has made over time and time again. I mean, they are the fastest car on the track, or cars on the track. They have talented drivers, they have a talented team, but they continuously make strategical errors, or just errors in general, that have cost them during times this season where you have Max, a driver like Max, or others. For example, Carlos Sainz, seeing him on the podium was fantastic, which we'll talk about later. But there's several instances where what someone like Max has been able to do this season has really, I believe, truly been not just how skilled he is as a driver, but also more so because of the failures and mistakes that McLaren has made. And this weekend is a very true example of that. So now we go into Abu Dhabi. We have three drivers willing to battle it out. And two of those drivers are now coming off of a race where one was able to regain confidence and probably had it shattered to some degree at the end of the race. Both of them have had a situation that was beyond their control, and now they have Max. They have the best driver on the grid, arguably, who is now going to battle them in that final showdown. I mean, you couldn't write it better for those of us that want to be entertained, but it is incredibly frustrating as well to see a team who has all the cards, all the ability, all the aces in a pocket, and somehow make decisions that do nothing but cost them. And interestingly enough, and I'll just say this, the other team that I was thinking about as a comparable that have been in situations where they've made strategical errors or there's been car mechanical failures is Ferrari, right? Ferrari's been in situations more so over the last several years where they've been competitive or they have amazing drivers, they have things, but they just can't, they make decisions sometimes where you're thinking, you know, what's going on ultimately. And so it's interesting to see, but I do think that overall for Red Bull, I mean, they did a fantastic strategic masterclass this weekend, specifically in the race. And they're like a well-oiled machine when it comes to these things. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But I definitely was very vocal in front of the TV this morning. I can tell you that, as I'm sure you were as well.
Yeah, no, just going back to the beginning of your monologue, actually, the difference between Verstappen and Piastri is now 5 points even. So Piastri, after the sprint race, of course, being 2 points ahead of Verstappen, must feel a little bit deprived of that good weekend that he started. And yeah, it's like you say, I mean, they're going to go into the next weekend with a lot of mixed emotions. And it's interesting because you're right that McLaren has made a lot of mistakes, and I don't know, I do think Red Bull have been very efficient, because the only thing I can really think of where perhaps they left quite a lot of points on the board due to their own mistake was Barcelona, where Verstappen, you know, was battling with Russell in a way that was not really the most professional, I suppose. And, you know, other times, for example, Antonelli crashing into Verstappen in Austria, those were things that were not really their own fault. And with McLaren, you know, it's a little bit easier to go back to all the countless strategical and radio chaos that they've had over the season. And there's just been a lot of things that that leave for more to be desired. Of course, it's also perhaps the difficulty with having two drivers that are number one drivers, or not really picking between the two. And at least, you know, I guess on the one hand, perhaps you can say that that's unfortunate for McLaren, but for us as viewers, I think it's very exciting, because it's been a while since we went into a three-horse race to the end of the season, and I'm very glad that that we are going to. You started talking about other teams there. In the meantime, I was actually looking a little bit, and I'm the last person that wants to get a DSQ for Alonso, but I'm just looking a little bit here at the tire stints from everyone, and you know, the mandated 25 maximum laps of tires was for any tire, but throughout all sessions. So, you know, if you'd had done several laps on a tire in practice or in quali or in the sprint, then those laps count towards the race as well. And I'm just seeing now that actually Alonso, the last tire, the hard tire that he used, he did 25 laps in the race, but that was a scrub tire, it says. It was a tire that was already used previously. So if it was indeed, then it's kind of impossible that tire did not have any laps on it. So that means he would have gone over the 25 lap count, which was maximum. But anyway, we'll put that aside because I don't want to. Let's talk about Ferrari like you started to. Yeah, that was very, I think for Hamilton, we already mentioned both qualifying sessions were not sessions to really look back to and dwell on for too long for him. And also Leclerc, you know, he was struggling so much with the car throughout both qualifying sessions. I mean, he even had a spin, pretty heavy spin. I don't recall if that was for the race quali or I think it was for the race quali, but that was actually at a very high speed. I was happy to see that he spun away from the wall and not towards it. But yeah, that was another race to be remembered. I think also the same can be said for George Russell. Haven't seen much of him during the race. It was Antonelli who at the start actually robbed him of his position. And Antonelli had a very decent race. Russell, on the other hand, again, I didn't see much of him during the race. And then at the end, it was a very interesting battle between Antonelli and Norris, and also Sainz. And at least, I don't know what about you, but me and Kari Laura here, we were definitely, we really wanted Sainz to get that podium. And I think a lot of people watching F1, and I mean, I'm an outspoken Williams fan, but even those that are not, I think it was, of course, he already had a podium earlier this season, and to get his second while there was actually something wrong under the car. He had a lot of understeer into the left-hand corner, and that was just, you know, it was nail-biting. And it was actually very interesting how Antonelli held off Norris for such a long time, because I felt like if Norris would overtake Antonelli, he would go for Sainz straight away. But him only overtaking Antonelli on the penultimate lap, and no, that was not on purpose. That was actually Antonelli losing the rear in one of the turns, and Norris overtaking him, but only having 1.5 lap left, which was not enough to overtake Sainz. And we were all cheering over here for Carlos. And it's crazy if you think about it that the driver that they fired at Ferrari gets two podiums this season, and the one they replace him with doesn't get any. I mean, I can only imagine what Sainz must be thinking, or what they must be thinking at Ferrari headquarters.
Yeah, we all love a really good underdog story. And I mean, although maybe last year we wouldn't classify Sainz as an underdog driving for Ferrari, I think that seeing him with the result that he's managed to do, like you said, with Williams and getting on the podium, and he deserved that. I mean, he really did. And I think that it was something that I would have to agree with you as well. I was really happy to see not only Sainz on the podium, but see Williams up there, because, you know, it hasn't been an easy road for them for a long time. And I think this puts them, you might want to double check this with Anton, but I think this secures P5 in the Constructors' Championship for this year after he secured the podium this weekend.
You might be right. I have not checked that yet, but I'm checking now. 137 over 92. Yeah, that practically does, because the most amount of points you can take. Well, if Racing Bulls get a 1-2, they would score 43 points, and that would indeed not be enough. No, they did secure. Yeah, they did secure P5. You're right. So
how incredible that is.
Yeah, for years we wouldn't. Yeah, we would never have thought that about Williams. And I'm so happy that there's finally two competitive drivers. And even, you know, I think what happened during the season is exactly what we somewhat expected. You know, Albon having the better of Sainz at the beginning of the season. But recently I think Sainz has been very much taking control of that team. And it's an interesting dynamic. But I'm very happy to see that not only are they performing well, the car is a good car. I mean, if you can get to the podium twice in a season, I still think those are outliers. But they're also, I mean, you know, if McLaren wouldn't have messed up their strategy, it wouldn't have happened. But, you know, these things are going to happen. You need to be there. And you would expect teams like Mercedes and Ferrari to pick up the pieces when that happens. And seeing that Williams is able to do that yeah, I can't believe my luck and happiness to finally see Williams performing again, right, where they should be. I hope they can take that into next year as well.
I completely agree. I mean, I think that regardless, at the end of this year, when they look back, they've had some lows, but they've also had some really big highs. And I think overall, to summarize their season finishing, if they are able to secure P5, even if it's P6, it's a much better result than what they've been looking at for many years. And I think they've made some really great decisions recently over the last several years to get them here. And one being their driver lineup, like you said. And it's nice to see them competitive like that. I don't think at the start of the season we would have been very confident in thinking that Sainz would even land a podium or that Williams would be in this position. So, like I said, we all love an underdog story, and I think that they truly are one of those underdogs for this year, for 2025.
That means we get to that part of the podcast where we do the quiz. And I'm very excited to do another version of a long quiz, which we always do when there's a sprint weekend. So we're going to go over all the 8 sprint points positions and the race positions. So we are here with Kari Laura, who's going to play against you, Sam.
Can't wait. Another rematch on the table.
Hello, Sam.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, and you?
I'm doing well. I'm sure you're a little happy with the Sainz podium.
Yeah.
We were just talking about this last race, and you were saying how you were hoping that Sainz would get on the podium, and he did.
Yeah, it's true. I love him.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. You were saying that in the previous recap, I didn't see Sainz on the podium in your prediction.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe for last race.
No.
Okay. Well, I think we have a lot of quiz questions ahead, so let's get it started. We're going to start with the sprint race, of course. So we had 1,234 players this weekend. And Sam, I'm going to ask you, how many had Piastri on P1 for the sprint?
Well, I know at least one, but I'm going to go with, let's say, 325.
I think maybe 400.
All right. Well, there was actually a lot fewer players. So there were only 121 people that went with a Piastri win. I guess over the last weekend with Piastri finishing around, you know, P4, P5 positions, not too many had that much faith in Piastri, unless you did, Sam, but only 121 players. So that point is for Sam. And we're going to go to Russell on P2, Kari Laura.
Russell P2, I think 200.
Okay, I'm going to go with 112.
Sam, that's very close to the right answer. It was 126. So that's two points for your count. And still pointless for Kari Laura. We go to P3. Sam Norris.
Let's do 225.
I think 90.
Sam, you're on fire this weekend, because 225 is very close to the right answer. It's 246, so you're only 21 away from the right answer, meaning you score your third point already.
Nice.
Okay.
It's Kari Laura for Verstappen P4.
I don't know, maybe 50 people.
I'm going to go with 71.
That means it's the first point on the board for Kari Laura. It was 32 people, so you're only 18 away from the right answer. It's 3-1. And we go to Tsunoda on P5, Sam.
I don't think a lot of people would have chosen Tsunoda, so I'm going to say 24.
I think that's a lot. Maybe 10 people.
10 people is very close to the right answer. It was 11 people.
Oh.
So it's 3-2. Kari Laura, you're getting back at it. Very good. We go to the next driver, which was Antonelli, after he also got a 5-second penalty in that sprint. Antonellion P6, and that one is for, I gotta say it right, I think that one's for Cari Laura, yes.
Antonelli P6?
Seven, sorry, yeah, you're right.
Okay. Maybe Terry People?
Okay, I will go with 73.
All right, well, there was a lot more people that went with Antonelli on P6. It was 375.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Well, I mean, the Mercedes are featuring quite often around those spots, no? So Alonso on P7.
Alonso P7, I'm going to go with... I'm going to do 89.
I think 74.
You went with 89, Sam, and you were saying 74. I was just counting previous points to make sure that was catching up. It was 4-6. 89 is very close to the right answer. It was 87, so that's another point for Sam. Means we're 5-2. It's time to step up your game, Cari Laura, for your favorite driver, P8 Sainz. It's actually... Wait, is it not Sam that goes first?
No. I don't know.
No, it's Cari Laura. Sorry. Yeah, I'm a little bit confused. It's not my best weekend.
Okay.
It's on P8.
Okay, maybe 50 people.
Okay, I am going to go with 44.
Means it's a point for Cari Laura. There was a lot more people. It was 190 people.
Wow.
Almost 200 people going with signs on P8 for the sprint. That means we're now 5-3 after the 8 sprint positions. We're going to go into the remaining 10 positions for the race. Of course, Verstappen winning the race. How many people went with a Verstappen win in their prediction for this weekend, Sam?
I'm going to go higher. I'm going to say 633.
I think 500.
It was a very high number. It was even quite a bit higher than both of that. It was 792 people. So more than half the people this weekend went with a Verstappen win. Well, means it's 6-3 already. And we move to we already did Verstappen. It's really not my best weekend.
Piastri.
We're going to go to Piastri. That's right. Yeah. Piastri on P2. We can do Verstappen again. But
Yeah.
All right. Well, Piastri on P2. That one's for Cari Laura.
222.
Okay. I'm going to say 313.
That means that Sam's just a little bit closer. It's somewhat in the middle, but it's 272. So that is another point for Sam. It's 7-3. And we go to another interesting one. Once again, Sam, Sainz on P3. How many people went with that? Actually, I should check. I think the last time Sainz got on that podium, I don't think there was anybody who... I'm pretty sure there was nobody that had him on P3. Anyway, it's a way back in my notebook, so I'm not going to do that again. But I'm pretty sure it was zero. Anyway, Sam, how many people had signs on P3 this time?
I'm going to say 4 people.
I love him, but I think that's a lot. I think 2 people.
Oh, nice. Well, you got it right. It was 2 people.
Yeah.
Actually, if only 2 people get it right, we ought to mention their names, I think. It's only fair. Mm-hmm. It was Samuel Hernandez from Colombia and Andrea Nisic from Serbia, who got signs on P3. So congratulations. The full 15 points for signs on P3 in the race. And a point for Cari Laura. So we are 7-4 at this point. We go to the other McLaren driver, Norris, on P4.
It's my turn.
Norris, yeah, it is.
Okay. Oh, it's your turn. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Norris before maybe 100.
Okay, I'm gonna say let's do 99.
should have gone 101, Sam, because it was over 100. It was 135. So that means it's another point for Kari Laura. If I'm not mistaken, we are 7-5 right now. Is that possible? 5 points and 8 points, 12, 7 and 9. I think I'm wrong.
the one that's supposed to be keeping score isn't even keeping score. Look at us go. That's fantastic. He's laughing because he doesn't even know.
Well, that's 12 and we had 13 questions, so I must have skipped one. Ah, wait, that's the Norse one that I didn't write down. I think it's 7-6, but I'm not 100% sure. I might have to listen this whole thing back. I mean, one of you better wins it, like with a lot of points ahead, that there's no question about it. But I think it's 7-6, but
fantastic.
I'm pretty sure, because Kari Laura, you got signs and you got Norris. All right, okay. Well, we're gonna go to Antonelli on P5. We'll see where we end up.
Okay.
I think that one's for Sam first. That I'm sure.
We're
about,
all
actually.
Over the place. I am gonna go with 187.
I think more, maybe 225.
Oh, that's very close to the right answer. It was 239.
Ooh.
So I think it's now 7-7.
Wow.
You sure?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Oh, this is horrible. Anyway, it's perhaps it's good for some comic effect. We go to Russell on P6. That one's for you, Kari Laura.
I think 123.
Let's do 129.
Ooh, both pretty close to the right answer. It was 115. That means Kari Laura is closer to the right answer. It means we're 8-7, probably. And we go to, I'm going to count the whole thing back, you know. Alonso on P7, and in the sprint he was P7 as well. In the sprint there were 87 people that had him on P7. So we now go to the race, of course. Sam.
Let's do 54.
I think 40.
All right, that one's for Sam. Because it's 57, so you're only 3 away.
Oh, nice.
Woo-hoo.
Nice, nice, nice. Leclerc on P8.
That's me, sorry.
Yeah, that's you.
Okay.
We're both not really paying attention.
Yeah, no. It's Sunday.
It's Sunday, yeah, that's right.
Okay. Maybe 100?
Okay, let's do 74.
I don't know why, because I would have expected a lot more, but it was only 17-17. So
Ooh.
That means Sam's closer.
Wow.
It's 9-8. And that means we're going to go to Lawson.
Okay, this one's, I think, me now, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
How can it be 9-8 if we've had 16 questions? Okay.
That's a really great question, Anton. <Jeez. laughs> You know, this is great. We should just at this point flip a coin by the end of it. Who wins?
We might as well. And I mean, I've written down a bonus question as well, but I don't know what for, because I don't know who's gonna actually the bonus question. Well, we will get to that. It's a nice one, but okay, we're gonna go first to Lawson. We're just gonna see, and we'll call it a draw at the end of the day, regardless
okay.
of where we end up, unless you get everything right from now on. Well, it's Sam first for P9 Lawson.
P9 Lawson, let's do 13. Lucky number 13.
I think 20.
It wasn't even more. It was 60 people, 6-0. So that means that's another point for Kari Laura. In my scoreboard, it's now 9-9, which is not possible. So we'll see what it actually was. But we're going to go to Alonso on Pete. How can it be Alonso on P10? And Alonso was P7. It was Tsunoda on
P10.
This
is just falling apart at the
seams.
I've written
down
Alonso.
My goodness. I don't know. I mean, you know, the thing that worries me now is that I've written down Alonso on P10. So I hope that the number I've written down here is, you know, is Tsunoda's number, not Alonso. But I think it is. How many people had Tsunoda on P10? Wait, if you just let me look on my computer without... Okay, I will look after you both say the right answer. That way I can check. And there's no cheating. This is the most messed up version of the quiz ever.
I think it is. I think this one takes the cake for sure. But, you know, it's entertaining and I wouldn't have it any other way. So
Tsunoda on P10
is my time?
For Kari Laura, yeah.
5 people.
I'm going to go with 18.
Okay, I've written down 91. But we're going to see now if that is correct. 91. Yeah, 91 for Tsunoda. So that means that's another point for Sam. I don't know exactly what the score is, but I have a feeling that Sam won it.
With feelings this time.
All right, but you know, I did write down the bonus question, so we might as well do the bonus question. Actually, Sam, you called the bonus question last time. You asked me a question, and I didn't have the answer for it on the podcast, so I took a dive into all the stats and figured it out. And the question is going to be: during this forecast season thus far, mm-hmm. how many times did it happen that the winner of that weekend was making his first forecast prediction ever?
I'm going to say 3 people or 3 times.
This weekend?
No. Entonces la pregunta es que durante esa temporada de forecast, teníamos 23 carreras.
Ajá.
¿Cuántas veces pasó que el ganador de forecast de ese fin de semana hiciste su primer predicción de forecast en este mismo fin de semana que ganó? ¿Cuántas veces pasaron? Porque en Las Vegas y Brasil...
Ha pasado antes. Alguien que lo hace por primera vez y lo hace correcto.
Y sabemos que en Las Vegas y Brasil, porque Sam preguntó a mí eso.
Ok.
¿Cuántas veces pasó? Y por eso ahora el pregunta de bonus.
Ok. Sam dijo 3.
Sam says 3 times.
I think the same.
You think the same? All right, that's not really helping. You need to go under or over.
You say 2.
Yeah, at least 2 times. Because, you know, when it happened last time in Las Vegas, we realized that it also happened in Brazil. So that's when Sam asked me. And okay. I didn't have an answer. So I
think
I looked it up now.
4.
Okay, that was the right way to go. It happened 5 times, actually, Sam. It is
really?
True that it's more of a phenomenon during the last part of the season, latter part of the season, because it happened in Las Vegas, it happened in Brazil, and it also happened in Austin, it happened in Baku in Azerbaijan, and the other race was the first race of the season in Australia. Of course, it was the first race of the season, but it was somebody that joined for that weekend for the very first time. So it was 5 times.
Wow.
Yes, so that concludes our Qatar weekend. And
and the chaos of not only Qatar,
and the chaos
but,
of the
but
quiz.
Our results
yes,
it, here of the quiz.
I'm very glad that we're out of it now. And I will count points
sure
later
are.
On. If anything went dramatically wrong, I will get back on it on the next podcast. But for now, I think, you know, what remains for us to say, I mean, we talked about it for a bit during this episode, so I don't think we need to go all over it again. But it's going to be very, very exciting to, since 2021 is the first time that we're going to go into a season last race, and it's going to be the decider of the championship. And for me, I'm already happy that this is the way it goes down. So regardless of who's going to take it, I would like to see that actually either Piastri or Verstappen wins it, because it would just be a big story. But on the other hand, mm-hmm. you know, I would like to say that regardless of who wins it, the person that wins it deserves to win it. I mean, if Norris wins the race next weekend, then, you know, or finishes second, I mean, he's had a great season, and we'll get back to it after the after the Grand Prix in Abu Dhabi and talk about it a little bit more. But I think I can finish off with saying that I'm just very happy that we got a week. Unfortunately, only a week with this triple header. I mean, now you know, the tension building up. I wouldn't have mind if we had 2 weeks to build up to this climax. But anyway, we've got a couple of days to build up to the climax, and I'm very much looking forward to it. And I'm also very much looking forward to considering what my predictions are going to be, because this is going to be the first Forecast One season finale that is not only open for Forecast, and it's also open for the actual championship. And you know, what are you going to do with your predictions? It's just, it's very exciting.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that, like you said, Anton, I agree with your sentiment that no matter who wins, I think each of those drivers deserve the title. So I'll be happy with any of them. Although, you know, all year, I think the driver that I would love to see truly lift that would be Piastri. But that's just what I would love to see. I don't, but if he doesn't and it's in Max's hands, it's deserved. If it's in Norris's hands, it's deserved. So all in all, I cannot wait. It is going to be definitely a nail biter. I mean, just to think ahead within less than a week's time and think about sitting in front of the TV with the lights going out and that moment of anticipation and knowing that when those lights go out, someone at the end of that race is going to be the driver's champion. That's pretty cool. So definitely looking forward to it.
And trust me, I mean, already on the qualifying session, there's going to be so much tension. There's going to be so much pressure. And
oh yeah,
I mean, I think with that amount of pressure, I think you just can't tell what's going to happen, because I mean, that pressure does something to a driver. And that's why I think it's just impossible to count out Verstappen, because I mean, he has the experience of feeling this pressure, which the other two don't. And yeah, I think that's just that's an added factor that you cannot discount from the whole equation. And
yep.
And actually, another exciting thing regarding Forecast, it looks like I've talked my father into making a prediction for this very last race. He's never made a prediction before, so it seems like I'm finally competing against one of my parents, which is going to be a lot of fun too. So hopefully he takes the wild card, and you know, we've been talking about first time winner, so you know, I wish him a lot of luck too. I don't think
That's
he listens
great.
To the podcast, but that aside, still wishing him a lot of luck.
Well, I think all of us need luck on our side when it comes to next weekend, and so do the drivers. So it's going to be exciting. We know that, and I think we all just can't wait until next weekend.